Your Career Doctors on Grapevine Radio. I'm Barbara Jackson, your host, and I'm joined in the studio by our co-host, Lee Miller.
And we're your career doctors.
Your Career Doctors is all about taking control of your career.
It's all about providing you with information, contacts, skills, and the tools you need, both on the show and on our website, yourcareerdoctors.com.
Career Doctors also provides you with access to experts, like our guest today, Mette Norgaard. Lee, why don't you introduce Mette?
Our guest today is Mette Norgaard. She's a doctor of human and organizational development, an executive coach, the author of a great new book, The Ugly Duckling Goes to Work. Welcome, Mette.
Thank you.
I was fascinated by the concept of the book, how the classic tales of Hans Christian Andersen apply in today's workplace. What gave you the idea to write The Ugly Duckling Goes to Work?
Well, I think there is so much surface advice going on in the workplace, and what I wanted to do was to dig into timeless stories, and from that to be able to really learn things about, you know, our passion and talent and energy and how to deal with stress and courage. And so what is it that speaks to human nature and that has spoken to us as human beings for, you know, well over a century? So I wanted to get to some real wisdom rather than just surface advice.
Well, we could all use a little real wisdom in our life.
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Well, I understand that you believe individuals who want to be successful in their work life as well as find their true satisfaction, they need to connect with this inner wisdom. So how do we go about finding our inner wisdom?
There are many small things we can do, but what I've done in The Ugly Duckling Goes to Work is I've compiled six stories that each teach us about some elements of what we really need to understand. So, for example, the story of the ugly duckling, who was really a swan, really helps us connect to our deepest passion and talent and grow into our swan-like nature so we can be authentic and alive in what we do. So each of these six stories go to a key element of some of the things that we need to understand better and work with for us to really come alive.
All right. Well, why don't you share kind of a brief summary of one of the Hans Christian Andersen tales and what lessons we learn from that?
Well, one of his most famous tales is The Emperor's New Clothes. And what happens to many of us is that we want to fit in, you know, maybe in a club or with certain people at work. And so, you know, we drive so hard to live in the right zip code and drive the right car and wear the right labels and say the right things. And so when you read chapter one in The Ugly Duckling Goes to Work, you learn that when you try to fit in, you end up living on other people's agenda.
Why don't you share, because not all our listeners will be familiar, although I am, with The Emperor's New Clothes.
With The Emperor's New Clothes. Yeah, The Emperor's New Clothes is a wonderful story about dealing with an organization, you could say, an old empire. And in this case, you have a very vain emperor who, because of his vanity, is being taken advantage of by a couple of charlatans. And they show up and basically tell him that they can weave a cloth that is absolutely exquisite, and it has the magical property that it can only be seen by those who are competent at their position and fit for their position, and those who are intelligent. So if you can't see the cloth, you're either unfit for your position or what he says, impermissibly stupid. And so the emperor kind of thinks, wow, this is really a cool little piece of cloth, because that way I can tell who in my realm I can trust. And, of course, the rumor goes out about this magical cloth, and while they're weaving absolutely nothing and just pocketing the gold, everybody pretends to see that they're weaving something. In the end, it actually turns out that, you know, the people who thought they could see the cloth that wasn't there aren't fit for their position, because they tell the emperor it's beautiful cloth and set him up for a downfall. So it's a story about us wanting to fit in. We are afraid of being seen as incompetent. We are afraid of being seen as not smart. And so we pretend, we applaud things that really we don't agree with. I see it a lot in big strategy meetings where the top brass is up on the platform and they're presenting the new strategy and PowerPoints and everybody's applauding, and then they look at one another and say, I don't get it. I don't think it's going to work. But we pretend. We pretend to join the applause. And what this story really is about is that it is more important that people can trust us in our work than they like us. And so that's a very important lesson for us to take into our work.
Well, how do you avoid losing control of your own agenda and at the same time be able to fit in? Because it is important to be able to fit in at work.
I agree. You know, they're definitely a way to know when to just fit in and make things run smoothly and when to stand on your agenda. And I think, you know, in The Ugly Duckling Goes to Work, the story of the ugly duckling itself is really about knowing the things that are negotiable in your life and the things that are not negotiable. And the things that are not negotiable are the things that go against your core values. It's the things that drain your energy. It's the things that make you less than what you can be in life. And the things that are negotiable, you know, are all the surface stuff, you know, which doesn't really matter at the end of the day.
Now, that's a very important lesson to know what you're willing to compromise on. And then, of course, what I teach, how to go about getting the rest of what is negotiable. So that's, I think, a wonderful lesson.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the other lessons we can learn from?
Well, just to build on what you said, Lee, I think the reason or the way we know what to say no to, you know, where we won't negotiate, is that we have to be really clear in what we're going to say yes to. And to know what we want to say yes to really depends on the nature of the work we want to do or the type of people we want to work with, or the way we need to do the work for us to take pride in our work. And so we really do need to give some thought to what do we want to say yes to. And when we know that, it becomes easier for us to know what to say no to. And then everything around it is stuff where we can go with the flow.
Do you have some tips for our listeners about how they can go about doing that?
Well, I think one of the most important tips is that as important as it is that we have a to-do list as we go through life, mm-hmm. it's equally important that we have a not-to-do list. Mm-hmm. And most of your listeners, I'm sure, are talented people who are in demand. And for people like that, you know, you should probably be saying no 5 or 6 or 7 times for every time you say yes to something.
Well, that's a good tip. Learn to say no. And that's not easy. And that's actually, I think, most of the studies I've read have indicated that women sometimes have a tougher time saying no. So how do you learn to say no?
Well, you know, I would agree, and it's been very hard for me to learn to say no. But one of the things I have learned is to say it sweetly. And so it's not
maybe
a blunt
firmly.
No, but it's more like, you know, the effort you're engaged with is really, really important. And, you know, I appreciate having been invited to work on this. However, I have 3 really top priorities for the next 6 months or the next week or whatever it is. And because of that, I'll need to excuse myself at this time.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Good.
So generally, I put a strong emphasis on what it is I must give my time to for the next short period of time, but also at the same time really validate the work that's going on.
Emphasize the positive things you're doing and then give a reason why you're saying no to whatever it is you need to say no to.
Yeah, yeah. And not say no in a way that makes them feel their effort is not worthwhile, but also really validate the effort, just saying it's not the right fit right now for me. Often I also really look to help them find the right resource, you know, or somebody who can do it maybe even better than I could.
Great. Yeah, again, give them something and not just say no. That's
yeah.
Those are very good tips. Now, the ability to tell stories is an important business skill. You know, Hans Christian Andersen, of course, a great storyteller. How can we use the ability to tell stories to help us at work?
Well, I think there are a few stories that it's important that we can tell at work, which is stories about our own life and experience and about, you know, our own passion and where we want to go and make a contribution in life. And I think any time you can tell a quick 2 or 3 minute story about your own life, it helps people remember who you are because people remember the stories you tell.
Good. How do you become a good storyteller? Can we learn that?
I would say practice, you know, but really get to the emotion of the story. You know, when we just share numbers and information, we're staying just with straight objective data. What we want to do is to get into the underlying feeling of things.
Okay. Well, now, The Emperor's New Clothes is a cautionary tale, but
yes.
You also talk in your book about some of Hans Christian Andersen's inspirational tales and how they, the lessons we can learn from them. So why don't you share a little bit of what you would call an inspirational tale and those lessons.
One of his most beautiful tales and one of my favorites is a story called The Nightingale. And this story is really about the differences between when the power you have is based on your position, your place in the hierarchy, or if it's based on expert knowledge, or if it's based on you being who you are, your authentic gifts and your talent. And so we're dealing with an emperor who has the political or hierarchical power. We're dealing with what he calls a music master, who today I think would have been a productivity expert. But we're dealing with a music master who speaks the language of, you know, eight-syllable words that nobody else can understand. And that person's power comes from their training and background. And then we're dealing with the nightingale, who just sings so exquisitely because it's, number one, what it needs to do. It's what it's created to do, and it's what it loves to do. And so there's a great deal of generosity in its way of being in the world. And so these three forms of power are really important to know, and they're all three very useful, but ultimately the authentic power is the greatest force and the most enduring force. And we find at the beginning of the tale the emperor being the one who is really ruling and misusing his power, and at the end of the story the emperor has had an awakening, and ultimately the nightingale is the one who influences the emperor. So the nightingale ultimately has the strongest voice, the most powerful voice.
Well, that's great. Now, do you have one final tip to leave with our listeners?
I would say just take some time to relax with a good story and reflect about what's going on. If we just stay on the treadmill and keep running and running and running, we don't even know if we are happy. And so take time, read a good story. Stories from our childhood are particularly powerful because they put us back into a place where we knew what it meant to have a feeling of timelessness. And I think that's something we really need today.
Well, thank you so much to Mette Nørgaard, the author of a great new book, The Ugly Duckling Goes to Work. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Your Career Doctors on Grapevine Radio. I'm your host, Barbara Jackson, and I'm here in our studio with my co-host, Lee Miller. Lee, that was a really fascinating interview. You know, when I was a child, I had a number of different bedtime storybooks that were always on my nightstand, and I must confess they're still on my nightstand as well, and I just love the idea of being able to confirm the fact that we really did learn everything we need to before we went to first grade.
Yeah, and I bet you never thought of those stories as being keys to your success in the workplace.
I didn't when I was little, but I have to tell you, the more and more I gain experience, more frequently I do think back to them and go, aha, you know? I mean, maybe not the Rapunzel story, but a lot of the other ones.
Well,
and, you know, the Emperor's New Clothes, having worked in politics, I think of it frequently, not just because of the word emperor, but because we are so frequently surrounded by people who are used to being told that they're right and they're wonderful and they're perfect, that no one ever has the courage and the fortitude to say, hey, you know what, that was wrong, or you could have done that better, or did you really,
really
think about how it impacts this group?
It's really hard when you're dealing with people who have very large egos and have been very successful to tell them that, in fact, you know, look, that's not the way to go.
Yeah, exactly. It is. And yet, those are frequently the people who need it the most.
And frankly, that can make or break your career by doing that properly or not doing it at all. Do you have any situations in your career, Barbara, where you found that you've had to make that tough call and tell the emperor, so to speak, that perhaps he's not going about this the right way?
Well, you know, my job, at least in a couple of different cases, my job was to do exactly that. I mean, certainly when you're a consultant, that's one of the things in the type of consulting that I did that you're paid to do. So that almost doesn't take the courage. If you don't do it, that you kind of get fired for being a yes man. It's the only job where that's possibly true. But, you know, in government, a couple of times it was my job to be sort of the gatekeeper or the truth teller, in addition to all the other things that would have been on the job description, which would be standard. There were the requirements to be the sort of voice of reason in the back of the guy's head. So, you know, I must say that that has happened for me. And I think what I learned from it is how you say what you need to say, when you say it, and to whom you say it are real skills that you need to learn. Because you're right, I think it is an incredible opportunity to be in the presence of somebody who has that much power and ego. But it's also an incredible career opportunity to become or to be viewed as the person who tells the truth all the time, or the you know, the voice of reason, or the the ethicist, or however your organization phrases it. But, you know, we've talked before about how you say it, when you say it, and to whom you say it. It's not always the same answer, and it's not readily apparent.
But it is critical that you keep those in mind, because the same thing said at the wrong time or in the wrong way that could be a career killer, if said at the right time in the right way, can actually make your career.
And sometimes, even though it may be your job, you're not the best person to say it. Sometimes you can place those words in other people's mouths that where they're going to be heard better. And that's not to say you're passing the buck. Sometimes I can think of a couple examples where somebody's spouse was the best person to tell them, or somebody's a constituent, my case, is the best person sometimes to tell them. But they you have to make sure it happens in the right sequence, and it's a skill. It's a learned skill like anything else. But the most important thing is to be true to yourself and to make sure that message gets communicated.
Yes, and sometimes that takes courage, right?
It does. And if you're really lucky, I mean, I certainly have been blessed to work for really terrific politicians. And it takes an incredible amount of courage. But, Ed Koch was, I have to tell you, not only is he a great guy and he's always wonderful to listen to on TV, he was an excellent boss. He was a great mayor, but he was a great boss. And that's not always true for elected officials. His rule was you told the truth and you did the right thing. And if you did the right thing and you told the truth, he'd stand up for you. If you didn't, you were on your own.
Well, did you ever have to tell Ed you'd made a mistake?
I did. I mean, I frequently had to tell him that he made mistakes too, but I only got to have that position of telling Ed that he was making mistakes because he promoted me, and he promoted me because I made a mistake.
He promoted you because you made a mistake?
He did. Imagine that. I made a big mistake once and gave him some good news, and there was a press release written, and he called a press conference, and, all the press is in what we call the blue room at City Hall, which is the room where all the press conferences happen. I was not there. I was still back in my office. I wasn't at the time. I was just a baby budget analyst, as we used to say, and so I wasn't elite enough to get invited to this press conference. And I realized that there was a terrific error, an error that changed the outcome, and that the announcement that he was supposed to be making at that moment was not going to be able to happen, and it was my mistake. So my first thought was to fling myself out the 13th floor window of the municipal building. But after I didn't do that, I got on the phone and I got his secretary, and I got her to put my boss on the phone, and I said, tell him to stop. There's just been this awful mistake. And so my boss did. He walked up to him just as he was about to make this great announcement and pulled him up to the side, and the mayor stood up at the podium and said, as I will never forget it, we're going to come back tomorrow and make this announcement. And that was the end of the press conference, and I thought I was fired. So I'm busily reworking the numbers and crying, and my mascara is running down my face, and I see this shadow on my work paper, and I look up, and it's the mayor. And I just said, here's my resignation. And he sat down on the other side of my desk, and he said, this is a really big mistake. I said, yes. And I'm crying, and it's just horrible. And he said, and it took a lot of courage to do what you did, to call over and to stop the press conference. He said, you made a mistake, but more importantly, you saved me from being embarrassed. You saved me from telling something that would have turned out not to be true, not because anybody intentionally was lying, but because we wouldn't be able to do it. And that takes a lot of courage. And I'm not going to forget it. And the next time there was a job opening, he called me up and he said, do you want this job?
Well, that is an inspiring story, Barbara.
I mean, he's just, there are people like that who realize that most people, given the situation of putting their job on the line or doing the right thing, would not put their job on the line. And you have to do that.
It's important to have courage in the job. I can remember one time I had to deliver some bad news, and how you deliver bad news is critical. To my boss, who was the chairman of TV Guide, and I basically had to tell him somebody who he had wanted to hire had basically been, and we'd made an offer to, had been given a counteroffer and wasn't going to come to work for us. And I had to deliver that news. The good thing about it was I anticipated that was going to happen. I kind of knew that was likely to happen, and I had a contingency plan. And so at the same time I delivered the bad news, I had another candidate who I thought he was going to really like, so I could deliver him that news, had basically give him the alternative plan and how we were going to react to the bad news and not just deliver bad news to him. And frankly, we hired this person and he turned out to be great, and,
right.
and my boss was thrilled.
Because you had a backup plan. And I have to say, I think that terrific as that is, if he hadn't found me working at my desk to try to solve the problem that I had made, if I had just been in there talking on the phone, you know, talking to my analyst or something, he probably wouldn't have given me the second chance. But because I was working so diligently to try to correct the error, as you were when you came in with the backup plan, I think people understand that everybody's human. Everybody makes mistakes from time to time. And the trick is to try not to make the mistake, but when you do, to learn from it, to correct it, and to deal with it in a timely fashion, not to wait until everybody else finds out and then spill the beans, but to say, hey, time out, this is what happened. I mean, look, at time and time again, what do we see from politicians in Washington? It's not so much the event that causes the scandal, it's the trying to hide it that causes
cover
the
up,
scandal. It's like a cover-up that undoes them, and I think that's really what Meta was trying to say is, you know, be authentic to yourself, and authenticity requires some skill. It's not just your own personal spirit. It's the way that you display that spirit. So the timeliness. And then, you know, we were talking over lunch the other day about those people who are such fuss budgets that they have to have everything absolutely perfect and they never get done.
Oh,
and
God,
so it's sort of the 99% rule. It's like, when is it really done?
Oh,
and that's different, as you are given to say, between the job of brain surgery and taxi driver, but still, I mean, you don't have to be 1,000% perfect in most jobs.
And frankly, very often, getting something done, or at least starting something, is more important than being 100% perfect, because you can adjust along the way if you've got a good plan. So it's very frustrating. I had a boss once who was exactly that. She had to be 100% perfect. She never had enough information. She could never make a decision. The reason, for that really very often is that here's somebody who wants to avoid taking responsibility for the decision, and the way they do that is to just keep seeking more information. But it's still very difficult to deal with, and it's very difficult to be effective that way.
And, you know, I'm curious, when she finally did come to a decision after being painstaking in her research, my guess is that then that decision was set in stone and she wasn't flexible about it, which leaves 99% of us out in the cold, too.
Absolutely. I mean, because having committed yourself and having spent, you know, kind of indicated to the world that you've turned over every stone, you tend to be inflexible in your decision-making. And in today's business world, that can be, you know,
right.
devastating because, you know, things change. And frankly, the more time you spend researching things, by the time you actually make a decision, the situation could have changed dramatically.
Exactly. And so sometimes that speedy answer, there's actually a business strategy called first to market. And the people who are first to market may not be the people with the fewest bugs in their system, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But they're there. They're surfing the curve in terms of timing. They it's like triage. I mean, if you go into a hospital and you get triage, you may have bigger scars than if you went to a plastic surgeon right away. But you're alive.
Well, that's certainly the thesis of Malcolm Gladwell's book, Tipping Point. First
yeah.
to market can be control the market, even if their product isn't the best one out there.
Right, but they've surfed the wave. Well, what can we offer our listeners besides Meta's book, which they can get at our website, yourcareerdoctors.com?
Yeah, Meta's book is great. I'd highly recommend it. It's titled, again, for any of you who would like to go to our website and purchase it, The Ugly Duckling Goes to Work, and it talks great wisdom from the traditional Hans Christian Andersen stories that we all heard as children. We could also offer our Managing Difficult Employees CD.
I think that's a great idea.
Which will I think, be very effective at being true to yourself in dealing with those difficult people, especially if they're your bosses.
And do you have a prescription for us, Lee?
Yes, I certainly do. It's don't be afraid to say what you believe at work, but say it at the right time and in the right way.
Well, thank you very much for that, and thank you to Meta. This has been your Career Doctors, Barbara Jackson and Lee Miller at Grapevine Radio. Thanks for listening, and remember, it's your life, your career, and your choice.